When Diplomacy Fails presents.
Hello and welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hey guys, welcome to When Diplomacy Fails. Welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hello and welcome to
Hello
When Diplomacy
Fails. Hello and welcome
fails.
To When Diplomacy Fails.
A project 5 years in the making.
The Franco-Prussian War.
The 7 Years' War.
Of the When Diplomacy Fails special on Napoleon.
The Crimean War.
To When Diplomacy Fails special on World War One.
The Dutch Revolt.
To the When Diplomacy Fails special on the 30 Years' War.
The July Crisis Anniversary Project.
The Swedish Deluge.
Britain goes to war.
The 1916.
To the Franco-Dutch War of 1672.
This is When Diplomacy Fails Remastered.
Alright folks, light a candle, get yourselves ready for emotional times, because this is the final remastered talk episode. I hope you've enjoyed them, and if you listen to these guys on this 5 year birthday run around and you've never listened to them before, then cool, and I hope that you might think that my conversational style, interview style has improved, or maybe it stayed the same. I don't really mind. It's gotta be fun to have these two things next to each other though, because all these collaboration episodes that were going on, and some interviews were quite exciting, I thought. I got some pretty cool guests out there, and there's still some pretty more good ones to come. Some pretty significant ones that I'm very excited about. So yeah, it's been real nice to have them side by side, and you can see really, well, how I progressed. Maybe not necessarily in asking the right questions, but certainly in maybe I just sound the same. I don't know. Let me know what you thought of the episode. And I hope you've enjoyed this trip down memory lane. And for those of you that it's your first time around, I hope you just enjoyed it in general. Because that's what it's all about. Enjoying history. Talking about history. Getting history out there. Bringing history to people. Making history thrive. Because this is when diplomacy fails. This is where history thrives. And this is the last remastered talk episode. Alrighty guys, enjoy it.
And here we are. Wait, what way do I normally start? Oh yeah, back on the podcast.
Back on the
it's
podcast.
It's been so long.
Jeez, like
sorry.
2 weeks.
Yeah, I know. My facial hair has actually...
That has changed. And the environment outside, it gets darker earlier in the day.
It's so. True, we have a light on now.
Yeah. Which I don't know what it does to the video, if that's off. But nah, I don't know. Well, we'll find out afterwards.
Yeah.
So if you guys don't like it, tough.
Yeah.
They just navigated to a different page.
Yeah, they did. Back on the podcast, my guest as always is Sean. Say hello, Sean.
Hey guys.
And how are we doing today, Sean?
No, I'm doing absolutely fine. We have been enjoying the great September weather of Ireland.
Yes.
Which is raining and sunshine at the same time. God bless Ireland.
Yeah. Or just rain, depending on...
Depending on your location in the country.
But yeah.
I think everyone's got a fair share of sun and rain today, so...
Yeah, so it's good. I know it's been a while since we did an episode like this. The only problem is now, if this episode seems a bit like, oh, what are they talking about? It's because the past week and a half I've been surrounding myself with the Boxer Rebellion. So I haven't exactly been thinking that much about the War of 1812, but don't worry. I'm as in this as I could be, so you also should be expecting the episode on the Boxer Rebellion pretty soon. So
yeah, awesome.
Monday, in fact. Unless my Libsyn account gets shut off because I have not enough money in my bank account. But you don't need to hear that, because I'm rich, because I'm a podcaster, of course.
Yeah, you could always get a loan from your best friend, but you don't ask.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well, the bank's closed now, so... Too late. Anyway, so we've got a little bit to get through today. I'm not going to say a load, because I don't know exactly how long this is going to go on for.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Let's be realistic. We're both pretty tired. We've been walking.
It's been a long day. It's dark already.
Yeah.
But let's not forget what made us the nation we are today. Be fit!
Oh, sorry. I completely missed that. Do you want to do it again?
No, it's on video.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so be fit. B is for... Can you get it this time?
Blogspot.com.
Yeah.
No, no! Dot net, dot org.
No,
what is it?
dot IE. Basically, the only thing you didn't say.
I'm sorry. My apologies.
WDFpodcast.blogspot.ie.
He doesn't even use it.
I really don't. That's the funny thing. The last update was like the end of August. I'm just like. Like, I actually originally said, blogs aren't me, I'm not going to have a blog. And then I was like, well, donation facility, I have a blog.
Yeah, there you go. So, it should be DFIS, as in donate.
Yeah, like, there's no
but
blog.
But DFIS doesn't just sound as good.
It just doesn't, because you can't D.
Plus, we don't want to force you to donate, so blog is just like, you happen to be there, and then all of a sudden you see a donate button.
Yeah, just happen to see it there.
Just happen to click on it, and... make sure that his Linsip account stays intact.
Yeah, it's Libsyn.
Whatever.
But anyway.
It's just like...
E is for email.
Uh-huh.
WDFpodcast@hotmail.com.
Not IE, because that's normal.
Yeah, that is normal. I can see why one would get confused, unless you hear it all the time like
right.
I do.
Okay.
Or have to like give it off in a grand spiel every time you say something. Yes. Which I probably don't have to do, but...
I love the amount of padding we're giving this opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important. It's important.
Padding is important. So if you want to email me, then go ahead. I appreciate all emails, great and small. Whether you're telling me that you're enjoying the podcast,
or if you're just saying hi.
Or if you're just saying hi. you could also go to Facebook, which is what F is. The F of BFIT is Facebook, which I'm sure you all know by now. Where you can like the Facebook page. Just reached 200 likes there. Proud, proud, proud I am. Or if you don't want to do that and you'd rather talk to people, well, I'd say do that anyway. But what you can also do is go to the Facebook group, which is History Podcasts, which also has around 200 people.
But the last three posts that I've seen on the History Podcast, two of them have been about beaches and the other one has been about... Oh, I put one up about toy soldiers. So, you know,
yeah.
History... kind of related.
It's
personal. Like, it's just about history. Because
we're like a family of people that do history.
People going on holidays and then showing off where they've been.
Yeah.
As well. Because, you know, who was that? Was that Ray?
That was Ray. And then Roberto made us all jealous with pictures of the sea.
Yeah, well...
Thanks, Roberto.
Yes.
Didn't need to see that picture of the sea.
Just,
making me want good weather.
Here, there's the sea over there. We could see the sea from here. I'm gonna take a picture and I'm gonna post it. You guys are gonna know.
Yeah.
We have the sea as well.
We have the sea.
We're an island.
We are wasting so much time. I is for iTunes, where you can
rate, review, yes. Download, and
what's the last one?
Generally enjoy iTunes.
Well, you can do that, but you can also subscribe.
Which, you can do that? I thought that was only on YouTube.
But yeah, so that's iTunes, where you should rate or review the podcast. More, I'd prefer if you reviewed, to be honest, so that I can read what you think. T is for tell someone. Not even, I was going to say friend,
yeah,
but that would be,
said
I
it.
Nearly
that
said friend.
That would be a lie.
Tell someone.
If you're a student, tell your history teacher.
Yes.
It's always a good idea.
It doesn't even have to be an actual friend of yours.
Tell your colleague.
Yeah, tell your colleague.
Colleagues are good. Customers, if you work in a cafe.
Yeah.
And they happen to be, you know, maybe talking about history.
Mm. Oh, just, by the way, Zach Twomley, who's that guy? Well, he does a podcast on the build-up to war, and it's really good, and it's called When Diplomacy Fails. Oh, I think I might check that out. Yeah, good idea. Oh. Huh. And then you can think to yourself, wow, I just did the T part of BFIT.
If you do all of them, he actually sends you like a little plaque saying congratulations.
I do. I genuinely do.
We should do that. And t-shirts.
I want to do t-shirts.
BFIT,
I really do want
like
to do
written
t-shirts.
On a t-shirt. Okay, we're going to do t-shirts in the future.
Yes, we are. Well, I just put the question forward to you.
No. I think we should go back and talk about Native Americans.
Okay.
Okay, so Native Americans.
Yes.
At the time, they were still living a nomadic life. They hadn't settled down. They hadn't adopted Western culture.
No.
They hadn't adopted Western religion.
Not completely, but there was elements of it that had entered into the animism as their kind of religion was called, because there were so many parts to it.
Right. They were being forcibly moved west. Now, the purchase of, what was it, Louisiana?
Yeah.
Now, who had claimed Louisiana first?
Louisiana was French. Louisiana is basically the French part of America. And it had been under the French sphere of influence since since England had been in America, it had always been that was France's territory.
Right.
Just like the 13 right. colonies had always been that's England territory. Louisiana, we might think of Louisiana as though the state is it's the state of Louisiana, but no, actually Louisiana stretched pretty much through up Central America, the center of North America, and up into Canada as well.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That is a lot bigger than I expected.
Yeah.
So this was the first purchase that America made. Did they have to... how much exactly was it?
It was $15 million. They bought a territory twice... Like, they bought a territory the same size as their own for $15 million. And today's money, I mean, obviously inflation and all of the other stuff. But still, it was a desperate act by Napoleon because once the extent to which Britain's empire... and its navy had pretty much removed the possibility of a Napoleonic America, he knew that the best thing to do would be to sell off the land.
So, he wasn't trying to do... Napoleon wasn't trying to adopt a British tactic and try to maintain the balance in America. Was that what he was trying to go for?
At the expense of Britain in Canada.
Like, if he sold it to them, was that at the expense... of Britain.
So well, no, because Britain. You could argue, I mean, later on you can say, oh, look at all that land. But at the time, Americans, especially Jefferson, really debated whether or not they should accept the offer. And not only because one issue was that there was nothing in the American Constitution, which had been so trumpeted in the past, there was nothing in the Constitution about accepting this kind of a deal whereby you would buy land from a foreign power and accept, especially this vast amount of land. There was nothing in the American Constitution about that. The second part was that just because the French were saying, this is our land, you can have it for $15 million, doesn't mean that the French had civilized, had ruralized, had made the land productive. There were still a lot of issues in that land that had to be solved.
And there were still Native Americans.
Yes, absolutely. And not just Iroquois. There was Creek tribes, there was Sauk tribes, there was loads of different ones. And the Americans knew that if they were to take this land in, that not only would they have the problem of civilians who were French who didn't really want to be under the American yoke, but they would also have the problem of numerous Native American tribes that definitely didn't want to be under the American yoke. And if they were pushed enough, then they could be pushed into the arms of Tecumseh in the north with his Iroquois Confederacy. And that was something they really didn't want to do.
Yeah, of course. I suppose the Americans would have seen a unified Iroquois state, one that would be... Because obviously, I'm just presuming here, but the Native population of America would have... far exceeded the Americans, the invader Americans.
So yeah.
You say, how many were there in America? 8 million at the time?
At the most,
The 13 colonies?
Yeah.
There would have far been more Native Americans. Would that be true?
Well, I would certainly say in the case of Louisiana Purchase, there was definitely a lot more Native Americans than there were actual so-called civilized civilians.
So you've got your French that are there, yeah. Mm. But in total, like, if the Iroquois had come together, they didn't take censuses.
They didn't take censuses, and just because you might say, oh, that's an Iroquois tribe, doesn't mean they necessarily throw their lot in when push came to shove.
Right, so were there divisions between the actual Native American tribes as to how they should deal
with absolutely, I mean, some of the Native American tribes, before a lot of them adopted the policy of basically hostility towards the East, before they started doing that, they were more so in awe of the new weapons that they brought, kind of like the Aztecs were. Yeah. Obviously not for as long a time, and once you start killing these people and taking away their lands, the kind of the novelty wears off of them being new and having all these weapons.
Yeah.
But certainly in terms of what their unified policy should be, there was no real, I talked about it a bit, that the Iroquois Confederacy was a grouping of five tribes that I really don't know the name of, so I'm not going to try and pretend that I do.
Yeah.
But they were unified domestically, but they weren't unified internationally. If one tribe wanted to interact with the East, with the American tribes, or with the British in Canada in some way, and another tribe wanted to interact with them in another way, then they just did. It wasn't like, Iroquois, we're going to act the same way.
Right.
So even though I called them a unified, they were a confederacy, but it wasn't like they were unified in...
It's a real shame.
Yeah.
It's a real shame that they didn't get... They're probably still reeling from the whole concept of a bureaucracy where there's organization.
Yeah.
You're ruled by a greater power.
Yeah.
So
even centralization, where they wouldn't really have it. They wouldn't really have the kind of administration that that the West, like in Europe, would have had, or even America would have had. That's why the two cultures seem so alien.
Right.
Like, they lived off the land, and they weren't really settlers so much as the Americans were, where they stayed sedentary lifestyles. These were they lived nomadic lifestyles, and they moved from place to place.
So they'd go, the colonists would move in, and when they came back, they to their surprise, have a bunch of American buildings and constitutions set up in where they would normally settle.
Yeah, and it just... It doesn't seem that surprising now.
I really think it's an injustice.
Of course it is. It's a massive injustice. But just like every example of this throughout history, and there's so many that don't even go reported, because the results of that benefit what's happening now. Like, if that hadn't happened, would we have the United States of America that we have now? Probably not. Yeah, I mean, if you remember back to the American Revolution one, of course there was acts that were in that said you can't settle past this certain point because that's Native American land. But gradually they started to encroach more and more. And even 10 or so years after I went into the States, there was 18 states in the United States at this stage. And pretty much all that land had either been carved up from the Louisiana Purchase or it had been carved up out of Native American land. And you can't really do that without removing those tribes that are there and shoving them wherever you can shove them. Often that meant pushing them into places where land was already inhabited. It was like a never-ending quest to keep on moving west. And I didn't mean that to rhyme, but it sounds kind of cool. Yeah. In the episode that I'm working on now in the Boxer Rebellion, you'll see the kind of comparisons and the contrasts that I draw. In the 1890s, this is kind of jumping ahead a bit, I know. In the 1890s, there is a movement called the Ghost Dance Movement, and it's basically like a reaction to the Americans' encroachment on the Native American culture and their way of life. And what this is, what the Ghost Dance Movement is a series of ideas and spiritual claims that if we become one with our old gods and if we worship them properly, we can defeat the Western menace and we can stop them encroaching on our lands. Exactly the same kind of idea as the Boxers had. They even had the idea of being invulnerable to bullets. But I'm not going to say any more because I'll ruin the episode of the Boxer Rebellion. But just keep that in mind. I mean, everywhere that there is weaker tribes beside a strong power, no matter who you are, you're going to exploit them. And it happened here in America, and as you'll see in the next episode, it happens in China as well.
Let's talk about New Orleans. Yeah. The Battle of New Orleans. Now, what was the whole 411 on that?
Well, basically, I mean, I know I didn't go into this at all in the last episode because I was running late on time. But
it was almost an hour.
Yeah, it was. But that seems to be the trend for these episodes now. What happened was, basically, it was a pretty big victory for the Americans, but it had absolutely no impact. Even though it is trumpeted as one of the biggest victories of the War of 1812, the battle itself actually happened after the Treaty of Ghent, which ended the War of 1812. So in actual fact, although it's trumpeted as such a big American victory that was so important, it didn't even need to happen. And there was absolutely no reason for it to happen
Were they fighting the French? Or
the Americans were fighting the British.
The British had New Orleans. Isn't that a French colony?
No. The French aren't there at all at this stage, because remember the Louisiana Purchase and everything. But the French haven't had New Orleans in a very long time. What basically happened was the British had landed there in an attempt to do the same thing that they'd done to Washington,
of course.
But they didn't get to do it in time, and it was kind of like once more American soldiers started to move in on the smaller British force, the British started to move north. And once they realized that American soldiers were coming towards them, they started moving back to the way they came towards New Orleans. This is where it gets its name from, because it happens near New Orleans.
Yeah.
It happens in 1815. I think it's... I don't know the exact date of it. I think it's either February or March.
When's the
Treaty of Ghent is in February 17th, 1815, I think. It's a week or so after the Treaty of Ghent.
At most.
Yeah, at most. So you can understand why they didn't know that the war had actually ended. So they
Plus, even if it had ended and there were British soldiers over there.
Yeah.
Like, they'd taken out your capital.
Exactly.
Like, you were really up to the...
Yeah, a lot of these soldiers...
If you have a chance, you're going to... definitely take some scalps just because you can, because like, this is your enemy. This is someone who's really pained you over the generations.
And we'll talk a bit about the burning of Washington in a little bit, but what I really wanted to say was that people say how much of a big victory this is, and when you think of the War of 1812, if you ask them, the thing is here, if you ask anyone who won the War of 1812, it really depends on who you ask. If you ask the British, they'll say, well, we won because we burned Washington. And if you ask the Americans, they'll say, well, we won because of the Battle of New Orleans. And yes, the Battle of New Orleans was a huge victory for the Americans, and it really was. I mean, you can't underestimate the fact that a professional British army was defeated by its American equivalent. And that's a pretty big deal, because the British now will have to accept the fact that just because they're Americans doesn't mean they can't beat the best that we can throw at them.
Did the American and British governments just sort of, did they acknowledge that it happened and then sort of blush that it had happened? Like, this is a bit of a screw up on both sides.
Yeah. Well, there was, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, I'm not going to put it down to like the kind of terms we would use, because we obviously don't know exactly what they said, but more or less it was like, oh, that's a pity. We didn't mean for that to happen, but secretly the Americans are like,
yes.
Oh yeah, because they won. So, I mean, it certainly softens the blow for Washington, which was a considerable blow, but
absolutely.
At the end of the day, it had no effective impact on the Treaty of Ghent. So if, say that had happened a few days before where the British army had been destroyed and the British had been forced to the negotiating table, maybe then it would have had an impact. But at this stage, the war had been acknowledged as over, and I'm actually quite surprised that the battle happened at all. Except for, as you mentioned, the fact that the British were there and the Americans wanted revenge.
Yeah.
And the British were very much on the run at this stage in hostile territory, so... the Battle of Fort McHenry, which I didn't really go into, that's often held up as the example of the United... where the American lawyer, Francis Scott Key, gets the inspiration to write the Star-Spangled Banner, which is the American national anthem. But what actually happened in that is not even a battle at all. Basically, the British cannons were zeroed in on Fort McHenry. The American cannons weren't. After 25 hours of bombarding, the British eventually left because they realised they couldn't coordinate cannon with infantry attacking. So what it basically was a 25-hour bombardment. And once the British left, that was seen as a big sign of, oh, they can't take us on, so let's kind of write this song saying how we'll never give up and everything. Not to disrespect the American national anthem, because it's pretty cool. Especially
not
when
as good as God Save the
don't yeah, well, the Battle of Lake Erie, which I mentioned, and I hope I'm not pronouncing that wrong, it was a big loss for the British anyway, because the British had lost a naval battle, which was supposed to be their forte against the Americans, who were
that
supposed
was a
to
naval
be
naval battle.
Yeah, it was okay. It was a naval battle.
Any detail on it?
Not really.
Like, were there 3 to 8 British ships in
basically
in
the
lake?
The British were outnumbered, and the Americans were able to use their numerical superiority. The British didn't consider the Americans to be able to capitalize on the numerical superiority that they had, so they thought, oh, we'll just go and get them kind of thing, which obviously backfired. Once they lost that, it meant that the Americans were able to control that lake completely, so they were able to stop the British supplying the Native Americans by lake. Across by the water.
Right,
and
so
once,
that was the stepping stone.
Yeah, that was the stepping stone to the Battle of the Thames on the 5th of October, 1813, and Tecumseh was killed in that battle. So
wow,
that was
okay.
That basically.
But you see, that's probably how Iroquois leaders roll. They're like, we are Native Americans. Oh my goodness, we can draw a comparison to Avatar.
Oh yeah, kind of can.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because he went and unified those tribes, and then he has the big dragon thing, and he fought at the front.
He didn't die, though.
No, but that would have been a crap ending.
Yeah. Yeah. That was basically how the dream of the United Native American State died. Once Tecumseh died, they lost their strongest and most able leader.
But he was fighting at the front, which is
he
really
was,
impressive.
Yeah. I mean, he was. And, I mean, that is really the last time. From then on, it's pretty much a mop-up operation. Even when the Native Americans are still in a pretty strong presence, you might think, the Americans are still always on the offensive and they're always expanding. They never stop to think, oh, what if they form a state? That idea died once Tecumseh died. There was no more of that now. Now it was just a case of, okay, they're in the way. It's really sad to say, but it was never really, what if they unify and face us again? But because they never did that.
Do you have any sort of detail on how the battle was actually fought? Was it fought beside a river? I presume it's fought beside a river.
I'm not going to pretend I know every detail. As far as I know, the Thames was named after the river that was there. It was named after the Thames from London. It wasn't...
Thames.
Well, yeah, I called it Thames. What do you call it?
Thames?
Thames.
Thames.
I'm sorry, I'm tired.
I didn't know it was called, that's how they spelt it.
T-H-A-M-E-S. Loads of people, some people pronounce it really strangely. But,
okay.
The Battle of the the Battle of the Thames. Thames? God damn it.
Thames.
The Battle of the Thames. It just seems so weird to
it
say.
Does.
Yeah. Especially when you know how it's spelled. The Battle of the Thames was basically the American battle. A land battle between the Americans and the Native American,
and with no
mainly
British
Iroquois. No, there wasn't really
was
a British support.
Canadian contingent in the
No, there wouldn't have been because
so it was just a straight up battle.
Yeah, and
between
it was
the two.
It was brutal because the Native Americans weren't organized into the kind of units that the Americans would have been, in that they didn't have like rank of fire or anything like that. They didn't have like rows of riflemen or anything. What they basically had were horse riders with rifles that you had to stop and reload, or failing that they used hand-to-hand weapons. It was very much a one-sided battle, and it was pretty much a massacre as well. Once the British had withdrawn their support and withdrawn the technology and training that they could give after the Battle of Lake Erie. Because the Battle of Lake Erie for the British was basically...
And how long was the distance between...
About a month in between the two.
Okay.
But in that time, the British had pretty much abandoned the idea of helping the Native Americans.
That's such a shame.
It is such a shame, really. But it meant that the Native Americans were by themselves, and they were at the mercy of the Americans' superior technology and superior tactics. So it was only a matter of time. But Tecumseh was killed in that, and with his death meant the death of... the idea of a Native American state. Yeah. We're coming nearly to the end of it, but I just want to talk a bit about two things. I want to talk about the disunity of the United States at this time, and I want to talk about the burning of Washington. I'll start with the burning of Washington first.
Okay, let's go.
What comes to your mind when you think of the burning of Washington?
Well, it's like the fire of London, except the British started it.
Except,
wait a second.
Yeah.
I'll start again.
I'm going to keep that in. That's brilliant. It is a pretty big event. I mean, when you think of the War of 1812, the first thing I thought of was the burning of Washington. And when I didn't know that much about it, I didn't think that it could possibly be true, because very little is said about it today. But no, it genuinely did happen. And it's one of those dark periods in Anglo-American diplomacy where none of it's really mentioned now. And you'd be hard-pressed to find any evidence for it, especially even 100 years later, when America comes to the aid of the British, first in the First World War and then the Second World War. It really did have a psychological and a physical impact, because it meant that the British, once they'd done that, it meant that they had to, because the British didn't get the surrender that they wanted straight away, they had to do more things. So the impact of the burning of Washington was hugely psychological. It basically brought home the idea that the British were able to do this, and it made the Americans, a lot of them, feel helpless. I read some of the quotes there, especially from New England, which really laid it out that we can't beat the British. We can't do the kind of things that they can do to us, even though we think that we're powerful and we think that we're newly independent and that we fought and gained our own independence, etc. We're still powerless to stop them burning down our capital. And that idea of helplessness was hugely psychological. I mean, that would be like... I mean, you never see it happen today, but say a proudly independent nation that had been independent for... but that had been independent for 20 or so years from its colonial master. And suddenly they're at war, and now their colonial master comes and burns their capital. That's huge. And it's really not stated enough, I think, because it's such a shameful period in American history. And it was called, a few historians call it the darkest period in American arms, or the most shameful period of American arms,
or
something
to
that effect.
Why didn't they call their book titles that? Why do they have to keep going to war? Not 1812. War of 1812.
Because
a lot of fighting happened in 1812.
Yeah.
Are you talking about French and like Russian War? What are you talking about?
I wish they didn't call it the War of 1812 as well.
It's
I wish they called it like the Second Anglo-American War.
I bet when
War.
You were researching it, you were like, oh, War of 1812. And then you like clicked on one and you presumed that all of them were the same book.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, these are different authors. What?
Or it was like War of 1812. It only goes on for like a few months. Wait a minute. 1815? That's when it ends? Why is it called the War of 1812?
Well, you know, the 7 years, what, the 100 years war, 300 years war, the 7 years war. None of those were accurate.
Yeah, I know. So the decade war.
And it would have sucked, the 3 year war.
Yeah. The day war. Yeah, you really can't
they
stress...
Could have even, it would have been nice had they renamed it the American Iroquois War, because then you can at least acknowledge that the Native Americans even were around for a time.
I know I said that there was no losers and there was no winners, but really in this case, the losers were the Native Americans and the Iroquois, and the winners were Canada.
no, they yes, really...
he did it!
yes, Canada.
Just because, in this case, the benefits that Canada got from this... I mean, at the start of this war, before it even began, you had a lot of disunity, and you even had the danger of the fact that, oh, Canada might seek the same rights that America sought, and what'll we do then? But this war really proved to the Canadians that they could fight their own wars themselves. I mean, of course, there was a British presence there, but the idea that when American troops invaded, and when we're able to push them back, look what we can do by ourselves... And that was really important in forming a Canadian identity, and it really helped form the modern Canadian state, because it gave them a sense that we're different from America, not just because the Americans are trying to invade us, but we have a right to exist on our own. Our state is justified because we can beat the Americans back. And that was huge, even with the Native Americans nearby, and even with the French nationals who didn't want to be part of this Canada. They were still able to do it. The issue of the French Canadians there is a pretty big one. And the Americans, in fact, actually tried to get them on their side. But because, as I mentioned, the Americans invaded Canada so recklessly and burned and looted and destroyed everything they came across, the French Canadians could say, well, we don't like Canada and we don't like Britain, but we're definitely not warming to the idea of helping you, America, because you're conducting yourself so badly and you're burning everything.
yeah.
Basically. So it was because of that that Canada can really be called the winner of this war. Yeah. Because they got something that America would have to fight a civil war to get, and that was identity. And Canada didn't have to fight to get that. They didn't have to fight itself. I want to talk about that, the disunity of the United States.
Yeah.
At this stage in America, you can really see... where
the fragile state
it really is. It's so fragile. I mean, we think of it as, oh, the United States and all that stuff, but really it was only united in name, especially when you look at New England, which I apologize, I really made a massive mistake on before, because forgive me, but my American geography is not the best. In my head before, I thought of New England as a state and not as a region containing numerous states.
I thought it was just that's Newfoundland. Oh,
yeah.
I'm so idiot.
Yeah. See, well, like,
I thought it was just the top one.
Yeah,
so
I mean...
It includes Maine and
yeah, it includes
Massachusetts
as well.
Massachusetts,
yeah. So it included a few areas, basically all the seafaring ones. So I was right in that. New England did want to operate differently from the actual United States. And actually...
The southern states.
Yes, but not just the southern states, because New England doesn't include all the northern states. It mainly includes the top ones that are near the border of Canada. As far as I know now, you'll probably correct me and say that I'm wrong, which I probably am. But oh well.
Oh, you're such an ignorant Irishman.
Okay, where's Wicklow? Tell me that.
Yeah.
What I basically wanted to say was, when the war started, it was by no means certain that America was going to stay unified through the whole thing. And in 1814... you had a constitutional convention, which is basically a fancy name for all the states get together and discuss the war. In that constitutional convention, New England and its grouping of how many states were in it actually brought forward the idea of seceding from the United States and being independent.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
That was something I meant to bring up last time and forgot to.
That's huge.
It is huge. And you won't see that really until later on in the American Civil War, where it started a civil war. And if that had happened now, I mean, it didn't, because it was only a very select few in New England who actually wanted to do that and break the Union and become separate. But if they had done that, obviously American history would have been very different. But even now, you can see the divisions in America with the slave owners in the South and with the not so many slave owners in the North.
And isn't the South, they were the hotheads, the ones that thought that the military power that the Americans possessed was enough to take the British, wasn't it?
Yes, they were. Their idea was, well, there's only 6,000 troops in Canada, we can take Canada and then bring Britain to the negotiating table. Forgetting, of course, that the idea of a sharp war and just doesn't
especially
exist.
Especially if you're mobilizing over such a large country.
Yeah.
The northern states realized that if there was going to be a war, it wasn't the southerners who were going to have to fight it.
Yeah.
It was those on the border that were going to have to suffer the consequences
exactly.
of
and
the fight.
There was the issue not just of the Native Americans, but also Spain, who still owned parts of Florida as well.
Oh,
so,
okay, they were still there.
Yeah, they were still there, but certainly not as much force as they used to be. And at this time, because it's 1812, they also owned New Spain, which would become Mexico. And we all know what happened between Mexico and America in the 1850s.
Had the war not happened, I would like to think that the Native Americans would have formed a state and would have stood up to...
Oppression. Yeah, what do you think if the Native Americans had formed a state, say, what do you think, what kind of impact that would have had on not just America but also Canada and the formation of both of those states?
The Americans would have had to formalize the war that they were doing. They would have had to say
exactly.
We have declared war on you and there's a state of war between us and your people.
Yeah.
Rather than just picking them off one by one, leaving them divided.
Yeah.
Because that's wrong. You didn't even let them fight as a unified people. You just eradicated them.
And it's very likely today that there would have been, if I'm not going to speculate to the extent that,
They could have united in a sort of equal sort of setting in terms of, okay, we understand that you're a country now, that you guys are on par with us.
Yeah.
Let's unify. Let's become the United States. You would have had all of those organic, border lines instead of the
cookie cutter, like straight line states.
Yeah, because it would have been each tribe would have gone, okay, well, we'll formalize this.
Yeah.
This is where our borders are. This is where our people are from. Who's to say what the majority language in America would be right
exactly,
there?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That could have, it could have just. America. I think America's really missing out on that native identity that they really should have embraced, but at the time the sort of opinion it's just such a shame that there
it
was
is.
Imperialism.
I know, isn't it? I mean, you see this throughout history, but I think now, and it's not really stressed enough, probably because it's such a shameful part of their past, that the Native American contribution, not only to this war, but also to the culture of the American continent, could have been far more if they hadn't been so brutally extinguished.
Exactly. Though, that being said, there's still, like, you see in all those war movies, like, First World War, Second World War, war movies, there's still, like, Native Americans fighting with their culture and heritage alongside, like, the American Army. They're in the American Army.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, of course there'll be descendants, but the idea that we have a homeland would never resurface again. And that's the biggest tragedy, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they were stateless from then on. And that's something no one wants to be. You will see, especially in the American Civil War, which we will do eventually, you'll see in that a real example of them forming an identity. And the Mexican-American War, which I covered before, that was an example of it as well. But in this case here, a lot of people in America saw this as their second War of Independence. Because the first one was seen as a revolution, but this one was seen as the actual war, where they had to actually prove themselves. And yes, the Battle of New Orleans was fought after the Treaty of Ghent, but it was still fought, and the Americans still won. So if you can beat the greatest army that Europe can throw at you, but if the Americans can do that, then they can really do anything. Well, Sean, that was a longer episode than we intended, but I think it still went pretty well.
Yeah, I think it'll go down a treat. All of you Americans will be reminded of the horrors you inflicted upon your people, but we'll also realize that, you know, it's a part of you. This, you should embrace it. Like, the British these days, they don't embrace the fact that they subjugated most of the world. They should embrace that. They should be proud that they were their descendant of the people that conquered the world, that owned and oppressed many people. Like, there should be a bit more pride in that. That's what they are. Because at the moment, all they go is, oh yeah, we're England. We're really good at football and tennis and cricket.
I do get what you're saying, yeah.
I think you should be proud of your history.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm proud of Irish history, even though we fail repeatedly and we get let down by so many countries.
Yeah.
I'm just so proud that our history developed the way it did.
Yeah.
And that makes us the way we are today.
Mm. So, thank you very much for joining me, Sean. Remember, be fit if you're thinking of ways to support, get in contact with, or inquire about this podcast. My name is Zach.
My name is Sean.
And you've been listening to When Diplomacy Fails.
Thanks.